Gut check time, sports nerds. It's time for another cross-checking episode of Inside the Locker right here on oneofus.net. By that, I of course mean we cross-check every athlete's background with IMDb, waiting and hoping for that Muggsy Bogues, Spud Webb, buddy cop movie, The Short Arm of the Law.
Guest starring Kevin Hart
for some reason, because he does the most with so little talent, according to the NBA itself. I am your host, Brian, the mailman always rings twice, Salisbury. And I am joined, as always, by my wrecking crew. That is JC, Dr. T-Mac, and the women DeLeon.
What?
Yeah, you heard me.
That was good.
You heard me, motherfucker. That is your new nickname. Also, Elliot, the Beetlejuice is loose, Fontanette.
I like it.
See how I combine two things?
That's
better. I get to dance with Miley Cyrus now. This is going to be good.
I combine two things that make one worse thing, which is pretty much my... pretty much what I do, how I roll. And Adam, our neighbor Adam, the big Hurt Locker Charles, isn't here yet. He's on assignment covering the big cricket match, which I assume means he's watching Pinocchio again and singing along with When You Wish Upon a Star. I can't confirm that. That's just what I heard. You can find this show, just like all of oneofus.net's content, on iTunes. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast. And you can become a donor / subscriber / awesomest person on the planet right there on our website. On the sidebar, you'll see a place where you can go and donate $1 to $25 every single month. You can make a one-time donation. Even if you set up, you know, some kind of regular donation and things change, you can absolutely cancel it. We understand that times are tough. That's why we're begging for money on the air. And, that would be really awesome. And actually, we've been talking about kind of setting up some exclusive content for our donors and how we're going to have a premium section of our forum. There'll be more on that later, but I just kind of want to give you a little hint. Hey, speaking of the forums, there have been a lot of great sports conversations going on, completely unsolicited by any of us. You guys just kind of jumped on there and started talking about various sports topics, and I want to see more of that. Please, please, please keep doing that. That is awesome. And if you're interested, that is forum.oneofus.net. How are you guys doing, by the way? It's been a while since we've been in Monster Dome.
Yeah, I'm doing good. A lot of really good sports to catch up with lately.
Yeah.
Basketball is kind of, NBA is sort of in that dead period where stuff kind of matters, but mostly it doesn't.
Christopher Walken is coaching every team because it's in the dead zone.
Yeah, but soon it'll be playoff time.
And how are you, Elliot?
Doing well. Excited to be doing some new movie reviews, just trying to learn and get better.
Yeah, the Highly Suspect reviews, you can hear both JC and Elliot on some of those reviews. We just put up a couple today. You can hear Elliot and JC on one of those. JC, you were on Jack Ryan.
Right along.
Yeah.
Elliot was on Jack Ryan, that's right. We're moving forward now that we're kind of muddling our way through the January dumping ground. And
it really is.
January is a horrible month. Horrible month, especially if you're just coming on and being a movie reviewer for the first time. It's a shitty, shitty, shitty month.
I like it, though. It's like it's a good time to train and pay your dues.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't start off with, like, her. You should start off with Hercules. It's like, don't come in with the best. Be like, look, I had to go through this shit, too.
I want to see a movie where the operating system on the iPhone gets so complex that not only can you fall in love with it, but it'll actually let you travel back through time and, you know, accomplish the 7 or 12 labors, however many
of
it
Hercules.
Was. Yeah, so it's Hercules.
It will be more accurate than Hercules.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. And it wouldn't have Kellen Lutz, and that would be the best part.
Oh my god, that guy cannot act.
No, he cannot. That's why he got his fame primarily from the Twilight franchise, because if there's one thing that franchise does, it's lift people up who don't deserve it. So
pretty much.
So there you have it. I want to remind you guys, if you happen to be one of the four conference champions from our Inside the Locker Fantasy Football Tournament, we'll be contacting you off air to have you play the movie/sports trivia challenge so that we can edit that together into one exciting show that doesn't involve us trying to call four people at once and, you know.
Yeah, I have reached out to them, but on the off chance the email stops working, because I reached out to them through the ESPN page.
Uh-huh.
And so on the off chance that doesn't work anymore, if you're listening to this, at Reply Us, and we'll get you going.
Yep, and we'll have you call in, and we will edit it all together. And that way the people listening will have no idea as it's going who wins until the very end. We're going to try and make it as dramatic as possible because it's fantasy football, so it needs a little bit of help.
And I would just say, just sincerely, congratulations to all y'all, because to get to that level, it's not just random and it's not just luck. You actually had to put thought into it. So, really, congratulations.
Yeah, it's a little bit of luck, though. It's not just Scott
Smidlin, he won his league in fantasy, and he also won the ITL Thunderbolt Challenge.
Oof. Yeah.
So, and he nearly predicted the exact final score.
So, Scott Smidlin, what we're saying is go to Vegas with us. we have some ponies we want to lay some money on, and apparently you have to go to Vegas to bet on horse races. Apparently, I don't gamble enough because I think that is true.
There's actually a horse race track in San Antonio.
There you go.
Well, yeah. I was listening to a thing today, and Vegas actually, this sounds like I'm saying water's wet, but I've never really bet it before, but Vegas apparently gets these scores right pretty often. Like,
what?
They're pretty professional bookies. I know. It's like, this is what I'm saying, water's wet.
It's one of those, it's for something that I plan on never partaking in. I have quite the obsession with sports gambling.
Despite the fact that you don't actually gamble.
Yeah.
That's actually very smart.
You have an obsession with sports gambling.
Yeah.
It's a very odd thing.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, it's very smart so you don't get into that, because I feel like it's a slippery slope. You're like, I just placed a few bets. And then it's like, I lost $10,000 that I don't have.
Yeah.
Oh, my kneecaps.
Oh, my wife leaving me. All those various things you get into. Like, I've never lost a shit ton of money gambling. I have seen Lifetime original movies in which gambling comes between, you know, a man and his family and is clearly the devil, and you should never do it. That being said, if I ever get some disposable income, I'm definitely going to go to Vegas try my hand, because if you're not in Vegas to gamble, you're there for the cardboard pirates and the hookers.
Yeah. So. I mean, I gamble. I just don't gamble on sports.
Well, that's good to know too, JC.
Yeah.
And I went to Vegas one time and I won about $700 at roulette, and I stopped. But Vegas, after you stop gambling, is boring.
Yeah.
It's just boring, and it's sort
unless
of
unless you really like 99-cent prime rib. If that's like your if that's your raison d'être, then you can go to the place that's called raison d'être, get a 99-cent prime rib and an HJ in the parking lot. Yeah. So, you know, Vegas, hooray.
Yeah, and if you ever want to figure out, you know, what type of women are, what type of man you're attracted to, go to Vegas, because they will figure it out for you. Like, they'll be sending you waitresses or waiters that are exactly your type, even if you don't know it. You're like, they keep on getting more attractive because they want you to lose.
What I find interesting is that in Vegas, Russian roulette really means which of the recently imported Eastern Bloc hookers you're going to catch the clap from. That's the real Russian roulette in Vegas.
God, that was the. Remember that part in Wolf of Wall Street where it's like, yeah, my bachelor party, we had like 15 hookers on the plane and so many drugs they called it up.
I was tired of those motherfucking hookers on that motherfucking plane. There were just too many of them. I don't know. I know what you're saying.
Like, that can't be based on, like, that was really based on a real story?
Snakes on a plane? Yeah. No, totally. No, dude, they had a bunch of snakes. They let them loose on a plane. And that was a documentary starring the great narrator Samuel L. Jackson. You know,
viewers, dear listeners, I walked straight into that one.
You did, like a whirling blade. You just like meandered right into like a turkey at a slaughterhouse. Oh ho ho! Look who it is! It's Adam Charles.
Hi.
Welcome to Monster Dome, Adam Charles. Bad.
How was the cricket match?
We told people you were at a cricket match.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Don't make liars out of us.
Yeah, come on.
We don't just make this shit up on the spot, you know.
Telling all kinds of truth.
Yeah, I can see kinds.
We tell the truth all kinds of different ways. Awesome. So, yeah, we have a beer. We just got started, and we were talking about the four conference winners of our fantasy football tournament and how we're going to be contacting them off the air to do the trivia challenge. But before we dive into this truckload of sports news that we need to cover, I want to wish a happy birthday to listener Chris McGowan, because he asked me to. He asked that I give him a shout-out on the show, and I thought, you know, we should do more of those in general. Mm-hmm. So, yes, happy birthday, Mr. McGowan. If you guys have something you'd like us to shout out, you know, maybe your
yeah, I got local something.
Team or, you know, whatever – just hit us up and we'll...
Yeah. Oh, no, I wanted to know...
You have your own show.
Well, my thing is, like, if it's Chris McGowan, does he know... Is his sister Rose McGowan? Because he could introduce a brother. That's I'm saying.
Absolutely. Even though she kind of looks like she's infected.
I would take some penicillin.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with it.
That's true. Directly to the heart. But yeah, so if you guys have something you want us to shout out, something you're working on, or some local team of yours you think isn't getting enough press, and don't say the Yankees, because that's not going to happen... go ahead and hit us up on Twitter at ITLcast, and we will do that. I also want to thank everybody who attempted to join us live for our BCS Championship commentary.
As Brian almost blew up.
And I want to remind you that you can download the entire commentary in its entirety, because I used the word entire twice, from the site right now. And I want to take out my figurative language paintbrush and paint you guys a metaphor.
Happy little trees.
Happy little tree. So in the first half of the commentary, we were very much like Auburn. I mean, we had some ups and downs that to get there, shit not working in past commentaries, but it really seemed like we were destined to win this one, to really just ace this particular commentary. And in the first half, we were cruising, and it looked like we had it in the bag. But then what looked like a rout was undone by a fucking router. And our Wackintosh router decided to throw the game and proved to be the Jameis Winston of keeping us from broadcasting. I've lost the narrative thread of this metaphor, but the point is...
What you're saying is Jameis Winston is the internet.
Yes.
And he broke you.
I'm leaving that one alone.
Yes, Jameis Winston is the internet, and he broke me. Well, and yeah,
the worst thing was like that's when the game got really good. And
yeah, no, I know. Commentary I was there. I was there, and it sucked because it did turn out. It looked like in the first half it was going to be a lopsided, very boring game, and then of course we lost the internet, and it was as if the gods were like, oh, they can't broadcast this live. Now we got a game, and it turned out to be one of the better BCS championships in a long time, and I was so angry that the router chose that day to die.
That's how I felt with the Golden Goals commentary, because like, I've never been on camera, and I was like, I've done commentary, this is going to be fine. I was like, oh, it's a camera. I'm just going to freeze right now like a deer, because I'm nervous. I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, and I don't know how we kept going with you
without
freezing
my,
and
I know.
Not wanting just, to be on camera.
I am such an integral part.
I mean, we should have just called it a quits and thrown in the towel right there. But
yeah, I was like, it was more for my own like. I was like,
you know, he turned into Garth in the Wayne's World when.
You're just when he scanners. Yeah.
Do you guys ever see Scanners? And the guy's head yeah, that was Elliot in a nutshell when he saw the camera. You know, it's not going to steal your soul. Like you're aware of that, right? Like, I know you come from a Cajun background.
Well, you know, he's going to see that store. You know, he's going to steal my soul.
I didn't know if the swamp people still had that belief that, you know, that cameras will steal a portion of your soul if you are allowing people to take your picture.
You're going to steal your soul. It's not good. We're going to listen to a good old Zydeco, get some booty, and it's going to be good. It's going
to
be fine.
You know, that would explain actually what happened to Jamarcus Russell.
As soon as the cameras kicked on, he was done. His soul was stolen.
Like, he's really like a poet laureate, just great, really hard worker, but the cameras come on, nope.
So all that to say, congratulations to Florida State on your national championship. And if someone could set up a Ouija board, I have a few choice words for Steve Jobs. Moving on, into the actual sports stuff that we talk about on this sports show after much rigmarole. The NFL playoffs are drawing to a close. We have our contenders for the AFC and NFC championship. In the AFC, it is going to be New England at Denver.
Ooh, good game.
Really, really horrible day for me. It wasn't so much that the Colts lost in the playoffs. I'm used to that. I'm a Colts fan. I'm used to them losing in the playoffs.
That's how they lost.
It's the fact that they had to lose to the fucking Patriots again. And they had to lose at Foxborough again. Foxborough, I'm really starting. Here's a theory I've come up with. Foxborough to the Colts is like nightmares to any of Freddy Krueger's potential victims. We have got to pull them out of that evil place if we ever hope to defeat them. We can't go into the dream world and think that in their domain we can actually beat them. But if we actually pull them out, and that means have them play in Indianapolis, then we have a better shot.
So you're basically incapable of being the Dream Warriors.
Exactly. Okay. Our Dream Warriors fell short, and now I'm just hoping we don't have a Patriots Super Bowl sequel.
You need a new nightmare.
Yes, we do.
Well, for me, it was like some of that play calling was weird.
Yeah, I mean, and I've actually had this argument with my brother.
I'm not saying fire the guy, but
well, see, that was my brother's contention, and I'm like,
he can't fire his brother.
Yeah.
Wishes he could.
I'll fire Elliot all day, but yeah.
He can fire a brother, yeah. Not oh, his brother.
Oh, it's like see, that. I did it. It's like that.
It's the A versus the ER.
And Elliot has now reminded me that I can't, in fact, fire him either.
No, you can fire him where you want. It is an at-will state. How, do you fire somebody who's not getting paid?
No.
I don't know. Ask his brother.
No, I don't think you do. But you know, we were having that discussion about whether or not to fire Chuck Pagano, and I was like, I mean, I get it, and I completely agree that the general play calling of the Indianapolis Colts is so uninspired, and it is. It absolutely is.
It's like LSU a few years ago.
It's an elementary, like, style of football play calling where it's just, like, all of the basics, and I get that. What I don't think you can do is fire a guy who, in his second season with a team that he took over when they were 2-14, has made the playoffs both years, had the exact same 11-5 record, which is excellent, and, you know, we were one game away from the AFC Championship this year, and it's like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's actually
made
changes.
There's definitely made progress, because you were out the first round last year, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, we were.
So you made it to the second round. Yeah. So you at least got past the wild card round.
And we got past that first round in pretty dramatic fashion.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, that was some Dream Warriors shit right there. I couldn't believe some of the stuff that I was seeing, and I was hoping that maybe some of that magic would be left over. But that's the thing. When you have to win the first round the way we did, we didn't have anything left for the Patriots who had been on a bye the first week. So yeah.
Well, I tell you, when I think about that first game, I'll always...
And they just played really poorly. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying.
I always remember JC's tweet where it's like, man, Andrew Luck is not fucking around anymore.
No. Andrew Luck, if you were laboring under the delusion that possibly Andrew Luck was fucking around, let me assure you that he is not fucking around.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a little too soon to panic and think new coach. Too many teams panic way too quickly.
Yeah.
Detroit Lions. And
Cleveland Browns. I don't know about Detroit. I mean...
Cleveland for sure. In fact, that's what I was... my brother and I were talking. I was like, I think you have the Cleveland Browns mentality, which is that, you know, you have to not only turn a team around in your first year, but you have to take them from garbage first pick in the draft to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Which is what Cleveland thinks. Cleveland, who has been notoriously bad for...
Yeah.
Since they became the Cleveland Browns again, every new coach they bring in, they expect that coach to get them to the Super Bowl the next year or they fire them. That's why they've had this weird carousel of coaches.
Like, you do realize you're based in Cleveland.
You do realize you're the goddamn Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're aware. Like, the people hiring the coaches have been there this whole time. They can't make the excuse of, oh, I didn't know how bad we were. It's like, no, you've been here. Yeah. You know. So stop expecting the fucking coaches with the same talent pool to be able to take that dumpster fire of a team all the way to the big show. It's just, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But
I mean, I wouldn't be making up this rule, but I would think it'd be like it's at least a 3-year minimum. I mean, 3 years is probably what it takes to take over a team. And by the third year, by that point, you should have at least made them your own.
Right.
And if you're not seeing progress by the third year, like Kubiak, then, then they've put in their time. It doesn't look like it's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Start looking for new management.
Well, the Kubiak thing is interesting because there was one season where it looked like everything was turning around for them, and it happened to be the last season before this previous one.
Right.
And it looked like they went from being a team everybody laughed at to being a Super Bowl contender to the point that this year a lot of teams were like, in the AFC, you really got to keep your eye on the Houston Texans. I think they're gonna run the table in the playoffs. And then by about week 8, it was like, no, they might get the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they are getting the first pick in the draft.
Yep.
They really held on. Like, it looked like maybe Jacksonville or Miami was going to sneak past them and take that number one spot in the draft. But they held on. They played their hearts out. And by that, I mean they played with no heart. And now they have achieved what they really wanted, which was the first pick in the 2014 draft.
It makes me wonder if they were mistaken and they thought that Jameis Winston was going to be available this draft.
What?
But we'll get into that later.
We will get to that.
I think about the Texans, I think about that episode of The Simpsons where Bart wants to stay home from school and he's trying to tell his immune system to put their arms down and to stop fighting the cold.
Yeah.
It's just like they were like, no, boys, don't worry about it. Don't really play. Just lay down on the field. You're fine.
J.J. Watt, put your arms down and stop fighting the losing season. It's over. Just let the team get infected with suck.
Yeah.
And lose as many games as possible to secure that number one draft pick.
They could have won a few more games.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely could have. So that's what's going on in the AFC. And then, of course, the NFC Championship is going to be Seattle at San Francisco.
Ooh.
And I want to refer you back to a few shows ago, before the playoff picture was completely settled, JC over here said, you know, the 49ers, who had been kind of a middle-of-the-road NFC team for most of the season, were getting hot at the right time, and sure as you're born, they're going to the NFC Championship. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Although I do want to make one, I have one complaint. Marshawn Lynch, we refer to Beast Mode by its actual proper name, which is Animality, because we've all played Mortal Kombat, so you need to knock off this Beast Mode shit. It's called Animality. Either use the proper term or don't use it at all. Anywho, yeah. So JC, I'm going to start with you on this one. Do you think that San Francisco has a shot? Because remember, they're playing in Seattle, which is a notoriously difficult place to play. I mean, the Seahawks in the last two seasons have only lost one home game.
Mm-hmm.
In the last two seasons. So does San Francisco have a legitimate shot to beat Seattle?
I think they've got a legitimate shot. Michael Crabtree coming back has been a real boost that the 49ers needed. Lately, Russell Wilson isn't the most efficient passing quarterback, and I've heard rumors that he's having mental issues. He might not be comfortable right now.
Well, then stop sending him those letters.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be a really close game. It's going to be a really hard-fought game. If you thought that Panthers-Niners game was hard-fought, this is going to be 10 times worse.
Not to mention the fact that these two teams fucking hate each other.
Yeah. Extremely close game. I'm going to give it to Seattle.
What do you think, Adam?
I think the same thing. I think it's going to be really close, and I think it's going to be really low scoring. It's going to be a running backs duel. It's going to come down to whether or not Frank Gore can outperform Marshawn Lynch or the other way around. Yeah. So I'm expecting like a 13-10, 13-12.
Yeah, I'm saying a 3 to 5 point difference is what I'm expecting.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I think the determining factor will be the weather and Marshawn Lynch. It's like, I watched that Saints game, and I was going for the Saints, but, I mean, damn, Marshawn Lynch, that guy is just a beast.
I mean, and, you know, with that passing attack that New Orleans has, which they didn't really bring out or didn't show what they could do against Seattle until, like, the fourth quarter when the game wasn't even really that close anymore, I think San Francisco's going to be to do even less than that with Kaepernick, and even though they do have Crabtree back and Anquan Boldin have a pretty good game last week. I don't see it go. I mean, I really don't see either quarterback throwing any more than 200 yards tops.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to make sure that they don't throw picks.
See, you know, this game sounds like, I mean, even if you were just an outsider listening to us talk, it would sound like a monster movie, because there is going to be somebody in beast mode on the field, and then there's going to be gore everywhere.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Pacific Rim. This was natural. I didn't...
It came up organically.
Like, they're going to fight in the rain.
Sounds like Pierce Hawthorne from Community. No, what? It came up organically.
Good Lord, that's hard.
We didn't actually do predictions for the AFC Championship, so let's go ahead and do that. Mine, if I can throw it out just immediately, is I hope to God the Patriots don't go to another Super Bowl. That would just be, it would encapsulate everything about my youth as a Colts fan. In that the year that Peyton Manning finally regains the touchdown passing record, if we have to actually watch the Patriots win a Super Bowl that year, it's just such a, like, can we have nothing for God's sake? And by we, of course, now just mean Peyton Manning fans, because it's not like he reclaimed the record as a Colt. But you know what I mean. It's like, just give us something, universe. So I'm hoping the Broncos pull it out. I think they have a major advantage playing at home. I think this would be a very sticky situation for them if they were playing in Foxborough. But I think they'll be able to pull it out at home. What do you think, JC?
Yeah, I agree. It seems like it's their time. They've been playing great all season. Yeah, they're just going to run the ball as much as possible, as much as they did last week, and that's going to carry them.
Cool. Adam?
I think pretty much the same thing. I don't think it'll be... I don't think... It's not going to be nearly as close as the San Francisco Seattle game, but I don't think it'll be that. Honestly, I don't think that it'll be that high scoring either.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the offensive juggernaut that Denver is, and the kind of points that New England put up last week, I think these are just two teams. It's two quarterbacks who have faced each other quite a bit, and I don't know. I'm seeing something probably like maybe 24-17.
Yeah,
Denver.
This is like a Highlander duel. It's like two Highlanders who have faced each other several different times throughout the years, coming together yet again for what might be the final showdown.
Yeah, and I mean, Brady hasn't been spectacular all season long anyway, and I don't expect him to be, especially with the receiving core that he doesn't have. So I think he'll have a pretty subpar game, and I think Peyton will probably have a subpar game by his standards, a subpar game, but it'll be – they'll pull it out in the end, and they'll do enough to – they'll be sure not to make enough mistakes against the New England defense to stay out on top.
Yeah, I got to – excuse me. I completely agree. I think it's going to be Denver. I think that the Patriots have been surviving just based on Tom Brady and the coaching. As much as, like, I don't like Bill Belichick, I think he's a bit of a cheater. But he's a good coach in terms of just the X's and O's, and they've been surviving just in that coaching, that quarterback, because the rest of their – they really don't have anybody else playing for them that's healthy. And when you look at – I think Peyton Manning has that mojo going, and I think he's going to be at home. He's going to pull it out. I think they'll probably win by at least a touchdown.
I think it's going to come down to whether or not Denver's defensive line gets smoked by Blunt. I think that's really what the key factor is.
In
going
Denver,
to be.
Blunt smoke you.
Yeah, it's like they just legalized marijuana there, and then let's think about this for a second. They legalized marijuana in Denver, and then all of a sudden a guy named Blunt gets really hot in New England, and you know, in sort of anticipation of this showdown. I find it a little too, there's some voodoo going on there.
What I would
saying.
Love to see is if, like, all of a sudden Denver turns into an all-star team. Just every good player just comes to Denver. It's like, oh, you mean I can just smoke weed there legally?
Ricky Williams didn't come out of retirement.
Yeah. Ricky Williams, as soon as it became legalized, was like, can I play for Denver? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can live in Denver. Oh, yeah, I'll just do that. That's really what I mean.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like,
I forgot. I wasn't thinking because I'm high as shit.
I think I've said this before on a podcast, but the thing that's amazing to me is that if Tebow would have put his ego aside, he potentially could be playing in this game in Denver, and that'd be a real story.
That might be.
He could have been the tight end.
I don't think it's an ego problem. I think it's more of a talentless problem. Yeah, I mean, he's got talent as a tight end, but as far as a starting quarterback in the NFL, the guy just can't hack it, and that's obviously what happened with each subsequent team that realized this about him.
Yeah.
But anyway,
even Jacksonville wouldn't take him.
Yeah, this is not a podcast from 2007, so we'll move on from Tebow. To talk about the new NFL coaches. There is a host of brand new head coaches in the NFL for all the vacancies that opened up as soon as the regular season ended. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Cincinnati. What did you call them? The Baffling Bengals of Cincinnati?
Yeah, Baffling Bengals.
The Bungles?
Mighty Bengals.
The Mighty Baffling Bengals of Cincinnati have hired Jay Gruden. No, listen very carefully. I did not say John Gruden. They hired his son, Jay Gruden.
The Redskins hired Jay Gruden.
Oh, shit, you're right.
He was the offensive coordinator for the Bengals.
That's it. That's what I'm going to say. Let's try this segment again where I don't fuck it up. I'm not going to edit it out. I'm just going to try it again. So Jay Gruden is the new coach in Washington. See, I fucked it up anyway. In Washington, the Redskins have hired Jay Gruden. Now, the thing about Washington as a team, as an organization, is they have never been afraid of nepotism. I mean, they hired Shanahan's son to be their offensive coordinator while he was the coach there, which always seemed like a weird thing to me. Mm-hmm. And now they've hired Jay Gruden because what I am suspecting is going on is that they really wanted John Gruden. John Gruden doesn't want a coach, so they figured if they hired Jay Gruden, then whenever Jay is confounded or has a problem he can't figure out, he's going to seek advice from his father. So ipso facto, they have John Gruden as a coach. That's really the only thing I can think of. Yeah. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati, but as we have mentioned time and time again throughout the season, Cincinnati was the most inconsistent team offensively. Like their defense would have like insane performances and then, you know, allow 40 points the next game, but the offense was really the most inconsistent part of that team. So I'm racking my brain trying to figure out another reason why they might have hired Jay Gruden.
It was a surprise for a lot of people because he's now a first-time head coach. Some people think that the offense that he had in Cincinnati would be better tailored to Robert Griffin III, and it might be. But yeah, it's puzzling. We'll see how you never know with a first time head coach, and we'll see how he does. I think he'll be fine for a little while. It's a talented team. RG3's got Santana Moss,
Alfred Morris.
Alfred Morris, the tight end, whose name I can't remember.
Him.
Yeah.
they have the villain from the Powerpuff Girls?
Guy after Chris Cooley.
Yeah. yeah, he was doing all right. And so, yeah, I mean, offensively, I think the Redskins will be fine for a little while at least, and we'll see how it goes next year.
And at least the one thing to put towards that is that he would have probably no excuses because it is a pretty – I mean, talent-wise, like JC was saying, it's a pretty talented team. And not only that, but they're also really young. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like you're inheriting a broke-down, you know, offensive system where the players are kind of on their way out talent-wise. They're, mm-hmm. like, at the edge of their careers. These are all players who have been in the league. He's going to take Alfred Morris and RG3, who are going to be in their third year. So, yeah. So they're both should be healthy next year. Probably both ready to or excited to learn about a new system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's coming into a good situation, and for as bad as they did, and he's coming in also to probably the worst division in football.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can really only go, hopefully only go up from there.
Yeah.
In an easy way.
One would think, for sure. The other, you know, there have been several new coach hirings. The one that really kind of intrigued me was Jim Caldwell being hired in Detroit. And Jim Caldwell was the former Colts coach who had a serious up and down tenure as the Colts coach, because in one year he's leading them to the Super Bowl. I mean, they lost to the Saints, but he got them to the Super Bowl. And then in another year, admittedly after Peyton is injured, they go 2-14 and he's fired. And this is all in the span of, I believe, 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And it is a very tumultuous tenure with Indianapolis. And then the guy kind of vanishes for a while. I don't know where he was. I'm sorry. I do know where he was. He was the offensive coordinator in Baltimore. And again, you want to talk about inconsistency. While he's in Baltimore, they win a Super Bowl, and then this year happened, which Baltimore's offense this year was fucking awful. I don't know if you guys would see them like get into these low-scoring grudge match games against Pittsburgh, but it was just like it was sad to watch.
Yeah, it was one of those weird things. Seemed weird, this being the year after the Ravens signed Joe Flacco to a $100 million contract, because that offense just didn't produce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing. It's like, you know, you talk about, you know, hiring Jay Gruden with the Redskins and signing Joe Flacco to a $100 million contract. A lot of this stuff is just, it seems like institutional stupidity.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, we just want to get to mediocre. Then we'll get good. And that, if it's a step, if they have a plan that we don't know, cool. But I just don't see the logic in a lot of these choices.
Well, I think the thing with Caldwell, what it sounds like is if he's taken over a system and he has all the pieces in order to make it successful, then he can possibly be successful. Once you remove one of those cogs, then it just all falls apart.
Oh, yeah. He's going to have another Peyton Manning injury situation, where so much of Detroit's limited success this year, and keep in mind, they collapsed harder than possibly any other team because they had so much promise. But the minute you lose Stafford or you lose Calvin Johnson or you lose Reggie Bush, suddenly that team is floundering.
Yeah, and the Detroit engine breaks down.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and unlike Jay Gruden, who's coming into the worst division, that's a very competitive division. I mean, it's Green Bay. Oof. Chicago is coming, has probably one of the best receiving corps in football, and Minnesota, who I guess we're about to talk about in a second because they also hired a new coach, is another one of those teams that can. I mean, if they get a decent quarterback in the offseason, that's another team that can possibly put up points with the talent that they have.
Yeah,
yeah. This team, it was such a weird enigma why nobody would seem to want to take the job, because it's of all the teams that needed new coaches, this does on paper seem to have the most talent. And I know people shouldn't put stock into this sort of thing, but since 1947, I think this is a stat I said the last episode, since 1947, every head coach that the Detroit Lions have had, once that coach is fired, never goes on to be a head coach again.
That's so weird.
Which is so weird, considering the coaching carousel that goes on around every team.
Are we sure it's just that, you know, they don't get jumped in Detroit and killed?
I was going to say, maybe if we pan back from the stadium in Detroit, we'll see that it's actually the top of an Aztec pyramid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's just piles of coaches' bodies everywhere.
And George Clooney's walking around outside. Yeah.
The only one is Steve Mariucci. When he stopped being the Detroit Lions head coach, he was still relatively young, And for whatever reason, he's just like, nope, not going to coach anymore. I'm going to take hang out at ESPN, then go to the NFL Network, gain 50 pounds.
As coaches tend to do.
They even drove the greatest running back in football into retirement. Yeah. I mean, Barry Sanders was healthy. It was like, I don't want to play anymore.
I'm done with this team.
I'm fine.
Speaking of the NFC North, Mike Zimmer, who is the former Cincinnati defensive coordinator, is now the Minnesota head coach. And this just from today, Norv Turner, the former San Diego Chargers head coach, has been hired as the offensive coordinator in Minnesota as well.
Wow.
Now, the report that I keep waiting for is, and maybe I've missed this story already, but I'm really hoping that their special teams coach has been fired. I don't know if you guys followed the Chris Cluey story.
About
Chris Cluey basically being fired from the Minnesota Vikings for speaking out in favor of gay rights. And the thing that really bothers me about that story is it's not even a situation where Chris Cluey is gay and they are ostracizing him because he is gay, which would be horrible enough. They're ostracizing him because he is supporting gay rights. In other words, they have fired him on the grounds that he has beliefs that he went out of his way to, you know, take in his own time and support.
Yeah.
And just if you read the whole story and especially the way that their special teams coach used homophobic slurs and just said awful things to try and make Chris Cluey quit, I guess. And then when he didn't, they fired him. And it's just, it's a very ugly situation. And I have no reason to suspect that Chris Cluey is lying. Chris Cluey waited for the entire season to be over to make sure that what he was revealing about the Vikings organization didn't distract the current players from being able to do their jobs. Like, I'm sorry, if he was just out to burn bridges, he would have done that during the season. So I have no reason to suspect that he is making any of this up. I mean, there are several people that can collaborate these stories. And, so in other words, what I'm really waiting for, if it hasn't happened already, with all the coaching changes going on, I hope this new head coach, and with Norv Turner coming in as offensive coordinator, I hope they bring their own people, and that asshat special teams coach, whose name I'm blanking on, is let go and never coaches again.
Yeah, and if anybody tries to say, you know, it's just football, it's just a culture, you know what? Culture changes.
And it's not.
And it needs to move on.
That would be complete bullshit, because
only if
it wasn't the punter who was like, talent-wise or I guess statistical-wise, is probably like a middle-range punter. He's not a great punter, but he's not the best.
Horrible, yeah.
However, if Adrian Peterson does the same thing, there's no way that happens.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that that coach talks like that in the room if Adrian Peterson is the one who's saying that.
Yeah, entirely.
It's strictly cowardly in the sense that he would only say it only when he feels like he's in a position to feel superior to the person he's saying it against.
True. Yeah, and that's the whole thing, is this whole, like, that argument of it's the culture of the NFL. It's like, no, the NFL is a corporation. And like any other business, there are certain things you can and can't fire people for. And what they personally believe and choose to be an activist for in their own time is something you can't fire them for. And you can make up all the bullshit excuses. My favorite story is that they started marking the punts as negative that he was doing in practice that were the exact same distance and hang time as the punts that they had previously marked as being positive.
Wow.
So nothing changed except that he wouldn't stop speaking out for gay rights. Literally nothing changed in his performance, and it's like he's got the fucking scorecards. Like, at the drop of a hat, he could provide this evidence. So, I mean, again, like, I think there's a lot more going on in Minnesota as far as the organization goes that needs to be fixed, and I'm hoping that, you know, with the regime change, that some of that gets worked out. But overall, I think Minnesota's big problem in terms of just on the field, if we can focus on that during the sports show, is that they don't have a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback that can be consistent, that can lead games. Christian Ponder is just not that guy. And when they tried to take Ponder out, the backup was not that guy. Who am I thinking?
Well, I mean, Freeman was there for a day before they put him in.
That's true.
I mean, not saying that he would be the quarterback of the future anyway, but still, I mean, you can't expect a guy, especially a quarterback, to come in after 3 days, try to learn an entire system,
right,
and then go out there and perform.
Well, that's symptomatic of the problem, though, is like their backup is the guy they had to go out and get you know, that one mid-season day before, because they didn't have anybody.
Yeah, and then after that was Matt Castle, who's succeeded before, But yeah, I don't really know what the issue is.
So, Mike, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Mike Zimmer has got a challenge on his hands because even with Adrian Peterson, even with some top-notch receivers, until they get a quarterback in there who's worth a damn,
yeah.
I don't see them really improving.
There was somebody in the comments section, I think a couple weeks ago, who pretty much asked the same thing, as like, what could the Vikings do in the offseason?
Mm-hmm.
I was discussing with him that you don't necessarily need a star-studded quarterback, and I probably wouldn't draft one either, mm-hmm. especially from this crop of quarterbacks that are coming out this year, because I really don't think that any of them, there's a possibility that there's somebody in there can be manageable, mm-hmm. but really you just need a game manager like how basically what Kansas City did with Alex Smith. You need somebody mm-hmm. to come in, not turn the ball over, be effective enough to get 8 guys out of the box against Adrian Peterson, and you know, and from there you're pretty much set. Especially if you have a defensive-minded head coach who likes that's what his background is in. It's in playing it's in defense, and he's produced some very, very staunch defenses in his past. You know, mm-hmm. he knows how to coach a defense and stop the other team from scoring.
Just have a quarterback and keep the other side honest.
So what I was telling him was, it's probably going to be something where you may want to find a game manager in the interim until you can find that quarterback of the future.
Right.
But try to find yourself somebody reliable for him to throw to, like a Jason Witten that Tony Romo has. If Jason Witten wasn't there, Tony Romo would not have the stats that he has.
Yeah.
The very little success that Tony Romo does have comes from the fact that he can, on third down, rely on Jason Witten to catch the ball. Mm. You need somebody there to get those really tough, intermediate 5 to 6 yard catches to just keep your offense on the field, especially when you play in a division where you've got Detroit, Green Bay, and who's the other team in there? Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are teams that can put up points.
So you're saying like a Wes Welker?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I propose to him, is somebody. Yeah,
like a safety valve.
Yeah, like a little slot receiver who is just sure-handed and is capable of just getting open to get you, almost a guaranteed 80% of the time, 5 to 6 yards.
You know, you bring up a really good point, because that's one of the things that gets me about sports that, you know, actually gets me really upset is, I feel like people, you know, so many players are so flashy, like Megatron, and I like Megatron, I'm not knocking the guy, but I feel like people don't give value to those really reliable players.
Yeah, I mean, those are the guys who do it. Those are the guys who keep one, your offense on the field, but more importantly, especially in that division where your defense needs to be rested to go against those kinds of offenses, they're the guys who keep your defense off the field,
yeah.
like catching their breath
mm-hmm.
and just ready to go out there with fresh legs against Aaron Rodgers, Megatron, the entire Chicago receiving corps. They got two all-stars.
The new monsters of the midway.
Yeah, exactly.
Alshon Jeffries and
Brandon Marshall.
Brandon Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, as much as I don't like New England, their players are reliable. Like, they'll catch the ball when they have to.
Yeah, but see, that's the weird thing about when they have to. Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head there, because through most of the season, there wasn't one.
Yeah,
there wasn't one receiver you could depend on who wasn't named Gronkowski.
Yeah,
and even then, you have a guy who is in and out because of injury. So yeah, it's a matter of when they have to, when the game is really on the line, these guys step up, and obviously that's really the only place it really counts. But and then of course we have Ken Whisenhunt taking over in Tennessee, who was formerly with the Arizona Cardinals before Bruce Arians took over there and really turned that team around. So I don't have a lot of high hopes for Ken Whisenhunt in Tennessee, mainly because, before we move on to the next story, so we've talked about Jay Gruden in Washington, we've talked about Jim Caldwell in Detroit, Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, Ken Whisenhunt in Tennessee, and of course, during our last show, it broke that Lovie Smith was going to be the new coach in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that crop of coaches, who... let's just put it this way. Which movie got the best director, geekologistically speaking?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, Tampa Bay with Lovie Smith.
Yeah.
McMahon's had prior success. He's coming into a place that he likes being there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a pretty decent talent pool, but they did bad enough to where he can actually come in there and impose some justice. So I think it's going to be like a good Remember the Titans. Like, when you play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you don't get blood on my uniform. It's going to be I would love to be at that training camp. That's all I got to say.
Training camp. Denzel is Lovie Smith. What do you think, Adam?
Okay.
I think Mike Zimmer in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he may not have the most. I think he's the best. He was the best hire amongst all these. No disrespect to Lovie Smith at all, but because I think he's a great coach, and I think he'll do pretty well in Tampa Bay. But
I think Mike Zimmer is coming into a position where he can not only succeed, but he's coming in with a, like, his, I guess his mentality, the team that he will put together. And this may all, you know, this is pure speculation because he's never been a head coach before.
True.
But coming from the kind of coach that I saw him be in Dallas, because he was the Dallas defensive coordinator before he went to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And that's when Dallas had, you know, high caliber defenses.
Mm-hmm.
He can bring that defensive, I don't know, that attitude mm-hmm. to a team works well for especially somebody like Jared Allen, who's probably the primary star in that Minnesota defense. And he can annoy the offenses in that division enough,
mm-hmm.
And especially with Adrian Peterson there, assuming Adrian Peterson can stay healthy, he can basically bring a, you know, he can do a lot with like what New England seems to be doing in the playoffs. You don't have a quarterback who's putting up high, you know, high numbers because
mm-hmm.
Brady's not. They're relying specifically on the running game,
yeah,
to get them yards and to keep the defense fresh and stop the other team from scoring points.
True.
I think that's what Mike Zimmer is going to try to bring to that team, and is going to open up a lot of eyes in that particular division when their other three offenses are putting up, you know, amazing numbers against everybody except Minnesota.
I'm split on well, JC, let me ask you, let me put this question to you first.
Mm.
Which team do you think got the best hire here?
You didn't mention Houston getting a new coach with Bill O'Brien.
Well, we mentioned that you know, a couple episodes ago. He was the first of sort of the vacancies to be filled was Bill O'Brien, who's coming over from Penn State.
Okay. Well, I mean, because the analogy of which team got the best director, I like the team I think that has the best cast, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Is the defense of the Texans.
Sure.
And Bill O'Brien coming from college. Now, granted, we haven't seen Godzilla this year yet, but, you know, it's kind of similar to that situation. I think Gareth Edwards came from the indie world and had success there, and all of a sudden, hey, here's a bunch of money, here's a cast with Bryan Cranston, Elizabeth Olsen, and fucking Godzilla.
Bill O'Brien. That's his real name, yeah. Fucking Godzilla.
The hardest negotiation that went on for that movie was trying to book Godzilla. That guy's agent is a ball buster.
And you should see his bathroom, and who has to clean that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Bill O'Brien, here you come. You got your defense, Brian Cushing, J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson at receiver, plus you have the first pick in the draft.
Well, I tell you, like, you know, you bring it up from college, like, you look at the NFC Championship game, you got Pete Carroll versus Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, two college guys.
It's just great to watch.
Not only two college guys, but two Pac-10 guys.
Yeah.
Two Pac-10 college. Pac-10 or Pac-12?
Pac-12.
Because it's like USC
versus Stanford. I think it's 10 teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to count the number of teams. Yeah. Because I think there's like 15 teams in the Big 12. No, there's 10 teams in the Big 12. There's 14 teams in the Big 10. And I want to eat a bullet because everything I learned in math is completely wrong. So I'm split, though, on Lovie Smith versus Mike Zimmer, because if I can borrow from my own fantasy football experience, Cincinnati's defense saved me on more than one occasion. Like, was put up so many points that I was actually able to win close games. So I know, just based on the numbers, that his defense, his work with that defense was really impressive. On the other hand, Lovie Smith is a guy who was so successful that Chicago fired him when he had a 10-5 season. That was the last straw, was a 10-5 season. How good of a coach do you have to be before your team's like, well, we can't abide this 10-5 nonsense. You're out of here. So I think the Buccaneers are getting a really great acquisition in Lovie Smith, and I think that Mike Zimmer has the potential to really turn things around in Minnesota. I don't know. It's just going to come down to who has the most, I guess, inherent talent and you know, what can they do in the draft to amplify that.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't get Johnny Manziel?
We'll get to that in just a second. But this is something I learned today, something that was going around today, is that apparently there's talk that it's being reported that Chris Johnson will likely not be with the Tennessee Titans next year.
Wow.
And if this is true and not just, you know, Bothan's bringing us bad information, is this a Michael or a Fredo decision? If the Tennessee Titans are really set, because what they were talking about is it has to do with the new coach and whether Wisenhunt wants to keep Chris Johnson as that number one back. So if they decide to get rid of Chris Johnson, is it a Michael Corleone move, meaning that it seems really outlandish at first, and then you realize there's this whole plan behind it, and all the machinations are revealed, and you're like, oh, shit, that's a master plan. Or is it a Fredo decision where it's like, God damn it, Fredo.
I was like, Michael Corleone.
Yeah.
If you look at Chris Johnson the last few years, he hasn't really been producing the way you would want a number one back to produce.
Yeah.
That was certainly the case at the beginning of this season, but toward the end, he became their most powerful offensive weapon.
Yeah, but
and especially in the passing game, he became one of the premier receiving backs in the league. And I only know this, again, because he was on my fantasy football team.
No, and
I had to watch him have, like, these real, like, shit-in-the-bed type of games, and then all of a sudden, he would just light it up.
But I tell you, it's the same thing we talked about during fantasy football. I would, you and I would agree on this. I'd rather have a consistent back than a guy who has a great week and then a shit week.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but if he's consistently bad.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too, is like I don't know that gutting the team of the few sparks of life that it has is a good idea for a rebuilding Tennessee Titans.
Won't somebody remember the Titans?
Won't someone remember not to fuck up the Titans? I don't know. What do you guys think?
You go first, because I think my answer is going to be both, but I'll explain why.
Honestly, I don't know. Coming in as a head coach for the first, I wouldn't have cut him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I was taking over the team, I don't know. A lot of it really comes down to, I guess, what kind of game plan it is you're trying to bring in. Mm-hmm. The only reason why I could think of you wanting to cut Chris Johnson would be because you want you want somebody like a Larry, what was his name?
Larry Johnson.
Like a Larry Johnson of a few years ago with Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't break big plays, but he gets you consistent 4 yards. Like 4 yards every single time. You give him the ball, you get 4 yards.
He's a bulldozer.
And you may only have that for a season or two. But if that's the kind of game plan you want to go with, then you definitely don't want Chris Johnson, because that's not how he gets his yards. He gets his yards the way Barry Sanders got his yards. You know, he'll lose 2, gain 8. You know? But in the past few years, the way it's panned out is 60% of the time he's getting 1 and 2 yards, and mm-hmm. the other percent he's getting, you know, the long 15s and 20s. That's not how you sustain drives. It's just how you gain field position at best.
Right.
So, it could be a great move. It's just a move that I wouldn't think you'd want to make in your first year.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's not exactly the best. I don't think that's the statement I would want to make in the first year. I'm not afraid to cut anybody. It's like, okay, well, that's fine, but I don't want you to be so stupid to cut your best player either.
True. They could always go get Vince Young again.
Yeah.
You get him out of the steakhouse.
Because that would be smart.
Okay, JC, hit us with this double-pronged answer.
I mean, I think it'd be both, because reports are that he doesn't necessarily want to be there, and part of that might be because he's not being utilized the best way, and which is probably why he hasn't been as productive.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think it would help the team if he wasn't there, if he doesn't want to be there. But I think it would end up turning into a Fredo decision, because if he was a free agent up for grabs, I think the first person who would go after him is Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Belichick did have that. He had that habit for a while. I mean, the Corey Dillon situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As well as
Randy Moss?
Well, I mean, I'm talking specifically about running backs. Oh, okay. I know there's another one I'm blanking on right now, but where he would, like, go after free agent running backs.
And as it stands right now, they've got Stephen Ridley, who fumbles.
Yeah.
And LeGarrette Blount, who's having a good playoffs, but he's not a full season back.
There is a clear expiration date on LeGarrette Blount. Blount will get
smoked out.
Exactly. Yeah. But here's my other question about all this. If they get rid of Chris Johnson, do we then think that their first pick in the 2014 draft is a running back?
They get Jeremy Hill from LSU. He's supposed to be the top prospect. I'm not just bringing LSU up for no reason.
No, we believe you. Let's play devil's advocate here for a second, because apparently I can only relate to this story through Al Pacino movies. But let's say they do take a running back. I think, based on what Adam is saying, which I agree with, about having that big bruiser back instead of Chris Johnson's more agile and what do you call it? He's more
he's a bouncer. He bounces it out. Yeah.
He's fleet-footed, and he's also there's a diverse range of things that he can do for the team. He can be the receiving back. He can get you the yards on the ground.
He's a Jamal Charles.
He's a Jamal Charles. If you instead want somebody like Adam was saying,
like a Marshawn Lynch,
a big bruiser back, I say go after Carlos Hyde from Ohio State.
Ooh, yeah.
Because Carlos Hyde, that was his style. Every game I watched him play, he was just beating people up to get those yards. He was just running them over. Yeah. He wasn't a finesse back, but he was somebody that could really hit hard and get those yards. So I would say if they get rid of Chris Johnson, they decide to go with a running back in the first round of the draft, I'd say get Carlos Hyde from Ohio State. Yeah. Would be my suggestion. I don't know what you guys think.
I don't have a better one.
That so. And like if you could pick up a free agent or just trade for like a really good fullback, somebody just stacked.
Totally.
Just to have that extra guy just leading you on.
Yeah, like Kuhn in Green Bay.
That's a very undersung position. But if you have a good fullback, you're going to get at least two extra yards every time.
Totally.
Because they're just going to clear out that other guy.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that CJ situation. Now, something we've been mentioning before, we're talking about drafts now. Mel Kiper has predicted that the Texans will take Johnny Manziel out of Texas A&M with the first pick in the draft. That's what Mel Kiper thinks. And what cause have I to doubt a guy whose hair makes him look like a windswept Eddie Munster? I mean, clearly he knows what he's talking about. But do we agree? Adam, I'm going to start with you.
No.
You don't think they will take Johnny Manziel with that first pick?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Let me just ask you this. If they don't go with Johnny Manziel, do you think they'll go with a quarterback at all?
You know what? I didn't think it was a smart decision for them to try to. But, I don't think Bridgewater or Manziel are the best best players in the if you have the number one pick. I don't think that's where you pick your need. I don't think you unless your need and the best player available kind of match.
Yeah.
That's by all means you take what you know you go
we
with
We call
need.
That the Andrew Luck of the draw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. But I really don't think quarterback is their greatest need. I mean, everybody shits on Matt Schaub, but I don't think he's a terrible quarterback.
Until
I don't
the
think
fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see. I mean, Bridgewater and Manziel may be better. They may pan out to be better than Matt Schaub. But I think if you have the first pick in the draft, you go with the best player. And
regardless of position,
you go with the best player. You go. I mean, that's the person you're going to pay shitloads of money to.
Mm-hmm.
Are you gonna put that amount of money into a quarterback that you aren't? Aren't that high on?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. even if you want to make the argument that Matt Schaub is not a terrible quarterback, he's also not a young quarterback.
No. That's true.
And in Case Keenum is a young quarterback, but it's pretty clear that he's got a long way to go before he is a seasoned starter. So I do think the need in Houston for a quarterback is pretty immense. But I also think that Johnny Manziel, the thing that's going to keep him from being a premier, and this I could totally be wrong, is people have been wrong about this before, but he's really small and fragile. Mm-hmm. And the first time he gets hit by a pro-level defensive player, that's going to be all she wrote for Johnny Manziel. He's going to be at least out for that season with a knee injury or something, because the guy is just he's a tiny little scrambler. Yeah. And the first time that somebody hit, I think it's going to be smart for Houston to pick him up if that way at least he won't get hit by J.J. Watt. Like, they'll have that guarantee. At least he won't get hit by J.J. Watt. But other than that, I just don't see him being a premier starter in the NFL. And I'm normally the guy that really hates that argument about size. But it's not so much his height, it's just the way he plays football. He's never had to take a lot of hard hits because he's always scrambling out of it at the college level. And as soon as he really gets hit by somebody, I think that's going to like end it for him.
They're
going to
light his ass up.
They really
are. It's really strange in the past couple of years, the two teams that have had the highest pick are teams that they don't have a lot of needs. You know, it used to be, Oakland, Cleveland, you could pick almost anybody, and it's going to be an addition to your system because you need help everywhere.
Yeah.
But Houston is a talented team. Like, they have talent at almost every position. They have a top-tier running back, a top-tier wide receiver, top-tier defensive lineman, top-tier linebackers, like more than one. There's this is a team, it's the exact same team that took them to the playoffs just last year. Yeah. You know, it's no different. And somehow they have such a shitty season that they're now in a position where they have where they can get the best pick. And man, I don't know how you'd pass up an opportunity like that to grab the best player available. You know,
well, who do you think is the best player?
I would say Clowney.
That's what I would say too.
Yeah,
I would say Clowney is the best player.
And I think Clowney is who they're going to go after, just because, like we talked about last episode, the combination of J.J. Watt, Brian Cushing, Jadeveon Clowney. Ooh. It's that defense will.
You're getting sexually excited by that defense.
I totally
Houston.
Am. I'm getting a defense boner. Like, I love watching defenses. Like, that's what I love about football.
You're having a sackgasm over there.
A little bit. It's going to just erupt. It's going to just everything's going to get really sticky around here.
God, you're going to make babies then on Sunday, come to Seattle San Francisco game.
No, holy shit! And that was the thing. Like, Seattle has such a great secondary.
Yeah,
you watch them work, and it's like the fact that Drew Brees was afraid to throw on them.
Yeah,
and nearly got picked off twice. And the only reason he didn't get picked off was because of everything that was holding him back was the defense and the rain. But if you look at Clowney and Watt rushing off the corner of that linebacker core. You get a functional quarterback.
Just I was really surprised that it was raining in Seattle for the playoff game. It was a major twist in that narrative.
On a side note, the mock draft prediction for the Cowboys' first pick is a guy named Ha Ha. Oh. So that'll work out great.
And where did they see Bridgewater going? I think this is also based on Mel Kiper's prediction, but
eighth to Minnesota.
So
maybe that could solve all their problems.
It could. I think Mel Kiper actually had Jadeveon Clowney going to Jacksonville, which I think would be a big turn of events for them and possibly something that could start things moving toward a recovery. But again, I think there's a lot more wrong in Jacksonville than just their defense.
Well, I think this all comes back to what you said at the beginning of the podcast, is there's a difference between trying to solve all your problems in one pick and then saying, you know, we have a plan.
Yeah.
We're going to take an incremental. Like, we're not just going to sell for mediocre, but if it looks mediocre, no, there's a plan in place. Like, we're not just, oh, we'll get that guy. We'll get that. We're not going to be the Cleveland. Mm-hmm. We're going to be the Seattle and say, okay, we're going to start over with the coach. We're going to get Russell Wilson. We got Marshawn Lynch. We're going to start building this a little bit.
I actually have a piece of advice for Cleveland in the draft. Don't take a fucking quarterback. You guys are poison for quarterbacks. Every time you draft one in the first round, that quarterback is out of the league in 2 years. Stop drafting quarterbacks.
You are the Dre of the NFL.
You are the Dre of the NFL.
That could potentially be bad for Blake Bortles.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I think his dad and his mom were bad for him for naming him Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles.
What is he, a Marvel superhero?
What is where is Blake Bortles from? I've seen his
University
name come
of Central Florida. He kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody wasn't on anybody's board at the beginning of the year, and just kind of
he has an amazing championship game or something like that. Like the last game of the season, I think is what kind of put him over the edge.
Yeah.
I thought they lost their bowl game.
No, they beat Baylor. They beat him like a drum.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think that's what put him on the map. Is that he goes in against Baylor, one of the best defenses of all time. And yeah, such an amazing game.
Methinks I hear a bit of facetiousness in that statement.
Good Lord.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
Did you see what he did against Baylor?
Wow.
I saw what everybody did against Baylor.
Well, that is the thing. Like, if you look at all these quarterbacks, like Matt Castle, what was that guy's name from USC a few years ago that was on the Jets? Sanchez. Mm-hmm. You see all these people like, oh, they're going to be so good. They're going to be so good. I think, you know, when you see people who they draft the good quarterbacks, I feel like you have to look at more their maturity and their quarterback IQ.
Yeah, it's kind of
than
like
their arm.
It's like that. It's also like that Jay Cutler situation where Jay Cutler came in the same year as Vince Young and Matt Leinart and some of the more educated people who talked about it were saying how they figured Jay Cutler was going to have a much better career than either one of those two, despite playing for Vanderbilt. Because he's playing. I mean, he was playing on a terrible team.
Yeah.
But he was able to perform within the terrible program that he was within.
Sure.
And he had the gun for it. Like he had the arm strength to do well in the NFL. And, you know, criticisms against Jay Cutler or not, you know, you can't argue that he's been a much better pro quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Either Leinart or Vince Young.
Let's put it this way.
Despite the program that he played for.
Jay Cutler just signed a multi-million dollar extension in Chicago, And Matt Leinart and Vince Young are hoping to get jobs at waiters at the steakhouses named after them in their respective cities. So, yeah, I'd say Jay Cutler, yeah, definitely fared better.
You know, since we're talking about college, I just wanted to ask real quick, are we going to talk about Charlie Strong?
About Charlie Strong? Oh, we talked about Charlie Strong coming to Texas.
Oh, no, it's just the rules. He set out these new rules for...
I didn't hear about this.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
He had a meeting, his first meeting with the players. He was going to institute culture changes. And he laid down a bunch of new rules. Specifically, he laid down...
No more losing.
Yeah. Specifically, he laid down 11 rules.
11 simple rules for winning a national championship.
You beat me to the joke. I couldn't think of how to make it work.
Not just a hat rack, Ellie. Not just a hat rack.
Well, the best one was, I think, rule number 3, where he's like, if you don't get a certain grade point average, then you run... If the whole team doesn't get a certain grade point average,
if you miss it, I think it's like classes missed.
Yeah,
if you miss one class, you run until you die. If you miss two classes, if you miss two classes, your corpse runs, you and your position.
Yeah, I've got him here. I can rattle them off real quick. Okay. So number one, players will attend, and this is for University of Texas Longhorns. Players will attend all of their classes and sit in the front two rows of all their classes. GAs, academic folks, position coaches will be checking constantly now. Number 2, no headphones in class. No texting in class. Sit up and take notes. Number 3,
best one.
If a player misses a class, he runs until it hurts. If he misses 2 classes, his entire position unit runs.
Wow.
If he misses 3, the position coach runs. The position coaches don't want to run. Number 4, no earrings in the football building, no drugs, no stealing, no guns. Treat women with respect.
Wow.
And number 5, this is the big one that's gotten people talking. Players may not live off campus anymore. Unless they are a senior who hits certain academic standards, the university will buy out the leases of every player currently living off campus and put them in the athletic dorm.
Hmm.
Number 6, the team will all live together, eat together, suffer together, and hang out together. They will become a true team and learn to impose accountability on each other. The cliques are over.
Wow.
Number 7, there is no time for a rebuild. Quote, I don't have time for that. The expectation is that Texas wins now.
Wow, so Clevelanding.
Yeah. Number 8, players will learn that they would rather practice than milk a minor injury.
Jesus. Meaning
if their leg is hurt, they're going to work out their upper body.
Yeah.
If their upper body is hurt, they're going to work out their legs. The focus is on winning and graduating. Anything extraneous to that is a distraction and will be stamped out or removed, probably like the Longhorn Network. Strong met individually with seniors and key leaders and reemphasized that the plan is to win now. Number 11 was his personal quote, I don't want to talk about things. I'd rather do things. We just talked.
Yeah.
Now it's time to do.
Yeah, I will agree with that, Mr. Strong, because you were terrible on the microphone. I would agree that you don't want to talk. So these rules, a lot of them, I'm like, this sounds like true blue Denzel Washington and Remember the Titans type stuff that I can really get behind. And others, I'm like, yeah, but if you kill a kid, they're not going to let you coach anymore. Like, this whole, like, if you have an injury, you're still going to work out. It's like, do you remember that year that there were all these kids dying from heat exhaustion in high school football?
Yeah.
In high school football, all these kids were, like, dying from heat exhaustion, and it was mostly because the coaches were pushing them too hard in this, like, blistering heat. I don't know if you're familiar, but Texas is balls hot in the summer.
It goes balls deep on hot.
So I just, like, I think I'm totally behind the sentiment. I just think that in practice, he needs to be careful with that.
No, because I completely agree.
If he pushes, pushing them is great, but if he pushes them to a point where he literally says, even if you have an injury, keep working out, that has the potential to bite him in the ass. And I don't want it to. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that he's wrong to have those kind of expectations. I'm just saying he needs to be careful.
Keep in mind, he did specify minor.
That's true.
Yeah.
Minor injury.
Yeah.
Well, then you get into the whole, like, what does he consider a minor injury?
Yeah, my guess is it's going to be like a broken finger or something like that. Something where you're capable of doing something, so go out there and do the thing you can do.
Right.
Don't aggravate it worse, because I still want you to play.
But
don't sit on the sidelines just because you think, oh, well, you know, my ear hurts.
Yeah, like if you have like a broken finger, you can at least run laps or something.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. 11 simple rules for winning a national championship, thanks to Charlie Strong. Well, passing the ball now with the assist of this terrible segue to the very real but not very important stories from the NBA, let's talk about J.R. Smith and Shoelace Gate. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but New York Knicks, he plays some position for them.
Resident frittata.
Resident frittata.
That sounds like a nice brunch menu.
J.R. Smith like was benched twice in the last four games. It may be more by now. It's because they play every 2 hours in the NBA.
He's sixth man. Doesn't he start on the bench?
Well, no, he's been benched. That's true.
That's true.
I thought he was Juana man.
He's been benched entirely and fined by the league for, and I wish I was making this up because it sounds like I'm making it up, untying other players' shoelaces.
What?
This is a thing he does.
Is he Bugs Bunny?
It's crazy. And if he keeps this up, he's not going to get any of the orange slices that Melo's mom brings at halftime. And he'll sit on the bus when the rest of the team goes to Shakey's Pizza. It's like, what? How old are you? Are you kidding me? Untying somebody else's shoelaces?
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Why is he doing this, JC? What is wrong with this guy?
JC, nobody, tell us.
Yeah, come on.
nobody understands anything that J.R. Smith does. And when it came to light, the fine, Adrian Wojnarowski, I don't know how to say his last name, he's a writer for Yahoo. He wrote a piece about kind of the history of J.R. Smith and his whole thing. It's really weird because he likes to play the role of somebody who kind of came from nowhere and got to the NBA and the whole world is against him sort of thing.
That started from the bottom, Drake.
Right. He grew up in a New York suburb with two middle-class parents and he got an education.
So also like Drake.
Yeah.
He's just saying. Yeah. Yeah. Started on upper middle class and now I'm here.
Yeah, it's easy to start from the bottom when the bottom is the middle.
Yeah. And it's... And yeah, nobody. When I learned that about him, I was like, "Well, now I know even less about you than I did yeah. before." Because
I mean, part of the problem is that this moron is actually proud of what he's doing. I mean, he's posted pictures of himself at a nightclub pulling someone's like sneaker laces. And listen to me very carefully, J.R. Smith. I'm going to say to you the same thing that I told Gilbert Arenas when he joined that gun club. That can't be your thing! You can't make that thing that you're known for. Otherwise, it will be the only thing that you're known for. Because yeah. You notice we're not talking about your stats. We're not talking about what an integral part of the Knicks unit that you are. We're talking about what a complete asshat you are.
I could talk about his stats. He's horribly inefficient.
JC's going to take some of that salt and just...
Right in that wound. Right
so much wound. So that somebody created a Twitter account a year ago that it's at Did JR Miss. And the only thing it tweets is no. No. Yes. No.
So he tweets every time he either makes or misses.
Yeah.
It sounds like that story out of a story where they put like Twitter, like somehow they managed to tag sharks.
Yeah.
That if they're coming in for the tide, it's like, oh, we got to know.
Yeah.
We got to know what's going on.
And sharks swimming around your ankles, untying your shoelaces. It's ridiculous. I think my theory is that he's just trying to get an endorsement deal for the throwback Adidas. It'll be him and the remaining members of Run DMC in the commercial with those big ass no laces,
the Velcro
hanging out. Yeah. The old school Adidas.
I just love it. Like I imagine him. He's the kid back at elementary school that just never learned how to tie his shoes, so he feels bad, and he's like, "Well, fuck it. Nobody's gonna have their shoes tied now."
A loop, and then the eel goes into the fuck it. I'm untying like everybody's fucking shoes.
I bet you he has like those Power Rangers like little faces you would put on your shoes because he didn't know how to tie them. Just to put them together. It's like I don't really know, guys.
But you can't force an endorsement like that. You have to kind of stumble into one the way Peyton Manning did with Omaha Steaks.
Papa John's.
Okay, yeah, we'll go back to the NFL for just a second because I want to say something briefly about this. Peyton Manning is being offered money by companies to make their company name his audibles.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's being offered money because apparently he does it so much and people are so interested in the way that he plays football, which is that he memorizes 17 different playbooks and then just calls out plays at random that companies are... So you could literally hear Peyton Manning next season out there going, Geico! Geico, Visa, 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 and then he's yelling at Wes Welker. I said Visa, God damn it!
Well, I'd say the thing, like I love listening to one of our local sports station, but the thing about listening to a sports station is you will hear four strip club advertisements in a row.
Can I say something about the strip club advertisements in Austin? So they go through and they list all these different
these specials,
all these features of what's going on, and all these things to entice you to get in the door. You know what the fifth one always is? The fifth one out of five, women.
Yeah.
They start with the food, then the drink specials, yeah. then the cover charge, then the amount of TVs they have, then what they're doing for various sports games, and then, oh yeah, and beautiful women. If you're going to a strip club for any reason other than to see naked women, there is a fucking problem in your life that you need to get sorted out.
I like yeah. the one ad that's talking about the daytime lunch.
Yeah, yeah. Who's there for daytime lunch?
And the owner, the owner of the club, mind you, is like, yeah, surprisingly, our club has a really awesome, like, really beautiful day crew. It's like,
yeah, I don't see how you can if you own a strip club. How do you even advertise on the radio? I mean, if you're trying to bring people into your club,
what you're saying,
wouldn't you want people to see what they're going to see when they get there?
Actually,
I would like at that point if I'm here in a strip club, advertise on the radio. That means that they can't put something in front of my face.
Yeah.
To want to actually go to the strip club.
Yeah. No, and you know, you're building this case, but I'm starting to see it now. These places that are advertising on the radio and not mentioning the girls till item 5 on the 5-point agenda, those girls have faces for radio. That's why all of this is happening. Well, it's starting to make sense to me.
I could just see Peyton Manning next year being like, Hustler! Hustler! Penthouse! Penthouse! Spread Eagle! Spread Eagle!
Whoa!
Well, you know what's actually really interesting about this whole, like...
Is he directing the offense, or is he is Shannon Tweed or something? I don't know what's going on.
Oh, Shannon Tweed, bringing it back.
Dude, I haven't watched porn in a while.
No, I'm not complaining. Shannon Tweed.
Like, I haven't watched porn that had stars in it for a while. It was just whoever this girl is.
The great thing about this whole Audible advertisement thing that they've got going on is you can make anything an advertisement. Like, take any company and make it an Audible, mm-hmm. and... 90% of them can mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they can mean... It's like, hey, guys, I'm going to be doing this company. If you hear any one of those 5, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no bearing on the offense whatsoever.
I feel bad for the company that hangs their hat on the play that he throws an interception and never uses again.
Somebody asked Peyton, like, what Omaha means, and he goes, oh, it means it's a run play or a pass play. Or a play-action play.
Yeah. I love that reporters think he's going to tell them what the fucking calls me.
You know I'm not Superman from the 1970s. I'm not going to tell you my weakness, right?
Yeah, that's just stupid. Hey, but speaking of stupid things, LeBroning is now a meme.
Oh, yeah.
Which JC is going to just not engage in this conversation at all. I understand.
Shouldn't it be Chris Boshing?
I respect you as a conscientious objector, JC. But so this meme is, and it's mostly prevalent in high schools, is where you pretend to fall down and you get really upset about it when someone barely touches you. And I've watched the videos on Instagram of people doing it, and they're really committed to it. Like, they'll be in a grocery store, and they'll just, like, brush past somebody, and they'll fly backwards, and then they'll slap the floor with their hands to make it sound like they went down. And then the important part is you look back at the person like, what the fuck? What'd you do that for?
Well, I tell you, I want to describe what JC looks like right now.
He's very angry.
Arms are crossed, just like, he's not even making eye contact.
He's De'Leoning. This, of course, LeBroning is replacing Brady-ing, which replaced Tebowing, which replaced Ocho Cinco-ing, which is just Chad Johnson taking pictures of himself and sitting around desperately hoping anyone mentions his name again.
Yeah.
Which is
Joe Horning, which is finding a cell phone.
Joe Horning, which is doing one thing that was notorious and then never playing in the NFL again.
Yeah.
But yeah, my biggest problem with this is I find it offensive that LeBron now thinks he has the monopoly on acting hurt and getting indignant. Thank you, sir, but I learned that from Coach Gordon Bombay, so you can't just have that. That's not your thing now. But it, of course, is a reference to the fact that the Miami Heat are one of the worst teams for flopping in the NBA. And I'm sorry, JC, even you have to admit that they do that a lot.
Yeah, JC, what do you think?
I admit to nothing.
Well, I tell you, JC had a really good tweet this week about how Miami had released, Joel Anthony?
Joel Anthony.
And they actually picked up a play that they could use. I feel like the Miami obviously knows it's going to be the Pacers, and they're just building their team around, look, we got to body them up so that LeBron can actually do something.
They don't want to be the team to take the fall. I mean, obviously.
They did trade one of their big guys for like another little guy, so it's not necessarily what they need to beat Indiana, but... I think they're going to end up making another move.
And if they don't beat Indiana, this whole season's going to be a flop. So, you know, I'm just going to keep needling.
You're just like...
poke the lion.
It's funny, we had this conversation after the Golden Globes nomination about how...
Because that's what we do. We watch the Golden Globes nominations, then we talk about sports.
Yeah.
Because that's what
we do. Well, it was about, you know, as a guy, like, you learn pretty fast, you know... I'm not bigger than this guy, so that argument's not going to get to this level. So Brian's needling JC, But it's not going to go to, like, anything really too serious.
He knows I'm harmless.
Yo, my ass.
He's a big kitty cat. Well, that's LeBroning.
I'm calling him a big kitty cat from now on.
It's a real thing that really exists, and you should look it up.
No, you shouldn't.
We now turn our attention to Alex Rodriguez because, well, he gets very cranky whenever anyone isn't paying attention to him. So the Joffrey Lannister of professional baseball has finally been punished. Mostly. His 200-game suspension was 200 and what are they?
It was 211.
211-game suspension was whittled down to 162, including the playoffs. Of course, instead of recognizing that he got a good deal out of this situation, considering he absolutely did commit the offenses for which he is accused, because there is mountains and mountains of evidence that he did, he decides to sue not only baseball, but the Major League Baseball Players Association. Ugh. He's suing the Players Association on the grounds that they were hating on the player and not the game, as he continually prescribed that they should do. And I just have this question. What kind of lowlife does something wrong, like clearly does something wrong, does something like heinously wrong, sues the organization that catches him, loses that case, and then sues the only other organization that would stand behind him?
Somebody who dated Madonna?
The Players Association made themselves look terrible by standing behind Alex Rodriguez. And now he's suing them. Oh, wait, no, hold on. New development. Now he's decided to say that the suspension is, what did he call it, JC?
Kind of like a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, it was like they did me a favor. Yeah. And I'm going to enjoy the rest. It's like, you realized you couldn't fucking win.
Well, I tell you, he reminds me, I have a bunch of friends who are in private practice as attorneys, and one of the things it reminds me of is that you get clients every now and then who you do as good of a job as you can for them, and maybe you lose, but then they sue you. And when you try to collect your bills, they will sue you for malpractice.
Yeah.
Even if you win, like, just because they don't want to, they want to pay you, it's like, they did everything they could for you, and you're still pissed at them.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of shitty person are you?
He's a petulant child. He is just, he will never, ever, ever admit that in any capacity he was wrong in this situation, when he was the only one wrong in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, even when he tried to call out baseball for, like, why wouldn't the commissioner come down here and face me himself? It's like, because in the history of this being an offense in baseball, the commissioner has never had to.
See, if I was
it has never been something that is done, and just because you want the rules to change for you doesn't mean you can make a straw man argument out of the fact that they don't.
See, if he's going to fuck around, and like, if I was MLB, I'd be like, fine, deal's on the table. Let's just prosecute. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You want to talk big? Let's do it.
Maybe A-Rod is Kaiser Soze, and the plan the entire time was to get paid not to play.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was get paid not to play.
I just don't know how you can be such a dick. Interesting.
Do they have to pay him?
I mean, he got paid throughout the whole arbitration. He got paid throughout what should have been his suspension
because of the players' union.
Because of the fucking players' union, who he was trying to sue. Like, the guy is just a fucking asshat. And I know I've used that word twice on this podcast, but I don't know of a better word that describes Alex Rodriguez. But don't worry, A-Rod. You're still leading the league in dignity batted into the dirt.
I just realized that's got to be pretty bad against the Players Association. If they ever want to have a future negotiations with MLB about certain things, contract like that they're contractually obligated to do.
To fight in favor of the players.
Like, this is going to be a position where the MLB is going to take them and be like, no. Remember when that shit happened?
Remember that time you guys backed A-Rod? Yeah, you can fuck yourself. Yeah, it's not good for anybody. It's definitely not good for baseball. And the few people that are still out there defending Alex Rodriguez, whatever, get help immediately.
I know. Let's see how many times we talk about A-Rod while this entire 162-game suspension is played out.
Yeah.
Let's see how many times it comes up in the news.
Exactly. Him and Tebow have this pact where it's like, let's see how much we can get talked about when we're not worth talking anything about. In lighter news that is inherently better because it doesn't involve A-Rod, RBI Baseball is coming back!
Woo!
Holy shit. So RBI Baseball, for those of you who don't know, or as it was called in Japan, and this is for real, I'm not making this up.
RBI Baseball.
No, it was... RBI Baseball. It was Pro Yakiyu Family Stadium.
Nice!
That's much better.
Pro Yakiyu Family Stadium was the first console baseball game to use real player names. Even though it didn't have the rights to use the team names, what it would do is, like, it wouldn't say, like, Boston Red Sox. It would just say Boston. Yeah. And you would play, like... But the other thing that was weird about it is that it utilized different ability sets for different players. So if you had like Roger Clemens or Nolan Ryan, they were the absolute best pitchers. Like, nobody could throw faster than those guys. Mm. So they actually utilized abilities from Major League Baseball, and the players had different skill sets. Like, for example, Vince Coleman was the fastest player in the game. And these days, if you want to challenge him to a foot race, you'll have to travel to the sprawling metropolis of Davenport, Iowa, where he is currently the outfield and base running coach for the Quad City River Bandits, which is, again, a real thing.
But he never loses his love tonight.
He never loses his love tonight, apparently.
The outfields? He's outfield.
The Outfields.
Love that song.
You made a reference to the band The Outfields.
Yeah.
All right. Good. All right. We're rolling now. I wasn't sure that the show had really started yet. But after an hour and a half, you making that Outfields reference, I think we've kicked off the right way.
Oh, by the way, before I forget, I want to say this before this podcast is over. I want all our listeners, every one of you, to find an animated GIF or GIF, however you say it, of somebody LeBroning.
Yes,
just please. To annoy JC.
Please, please do that. Well, I'm going to remind you again at the end of the show. Anyway, my hope is that they can form like the new RBI baseball, because the problem is that it was MLB 2K.
Yeah, 2K 14,
yeah,
13.
It got completely shredded by new licensing agreements, so it was out of the picture, and it was looking like what was the other game?
MLB Bigs.
Yeah, MLB Bigs.
It was going to be the only baseball game available, the only option, and yet here comes RBI Baseball out of retirement I hope they conform to the box score, two-dimensional view, because as with most games, when sports video games got overly complex with their mechanics, I stopped having fun.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's, again, that goes for most video games because I'm an old grouchy Luddite, but, you know, when I had to start... Like, I tried to play Dead Rising 3 today, for example. Mm-hmm. I got so fucking frustrated with it. I was like, I can't... Like, the first level was in the dark. Zombies are attacking me in the fucking dark. And I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. It's too much of this.
It's kind of the same way with, like, Grand Theft Auto 5.
Side scroller, goddammit.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way with, like, Grand Theft Auto 5. Like, I loved all the Grand Theft Auto games, and so I was really excited to pick up this new first Grand Theft Auto in years, and it's, like, way too realistic. It's kind of boring.
I tell you what y'all
ripped on the cars is fucking
ridiculous. What y'all both need to play, what y'all are saying, I'm playing it right now, Saints Row 4, y'all would love it. Because it's exactly, like, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. Like, one of the opening sequences is a soundtrack to You've Got the Touch. And that's like a plot point.
The
other one is Armageddon, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
You had me at Stan Bush, so absolutely.
A little bush is all it takes.
You got the touch.
All I imagine is Brian picking up a controller nowadays and just going, which one's B, which one's A?
He's not Kevin Lutz.
No, dude, I totally get it. I'm a complete Luddite when it comes to video games. But I do think that you have those two kind of, what do you call those, directional pads, and one of them controls the view and one of them controls the movement. I get that, that's fine. But there's literally now in some games where if you push the one that changes the view too much in the direction you need to look, it'll look up and above the player. And I'm like, I'm sorry, am I Michael Bay? What the fuck do I need this angle for?
Oh, yeah,
this is retarded. Don't do that.
It's like in Grand Theft Auto, if you press one of the D-pads down, it gives you cinematic view,
which
makes
horrible.
It insanely hard to control.
Cinematic view is terrible. But anyway, all that to say, I'm really happy RBI Baseball is coming back.
Maybe Tecmo Bowl will come back now.
Tecmo Bowl should be the next one. Absolutely. And I hope they evolve from their groundbreaking and now wholly standardized practice of incorporating real players into the game and instead allow us to incorporate fictional baseball players into the game.
Wars!
Yes, absolutely. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to do a quick couple rounds of fantasy baseball. And I'm just going to go around the table. You guys tell me who you would be your first and second pick for your fantasy baseball team. And you can pick characters from fictional baseball movies. Okay. All right?
Wait, fictional baseball movies?
Yes, meaning not... You can't choose, like, Babe Ruth from The Babe. They have to be completely made up.
Oh, okay, I got the first one. I got Robert Redford's character from The Natural.
All right.
Pedro Serrano.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Okay, what's his name from Rookie of the Year?
You took my second pick.
Henry Rowan Gardner.
Henry Rowan Gardner.
It's funny, I had Chet Sedman on my list, but pick, it's got to be Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
Yes.
So, at what age?
I don't care.
Okay.
I will forge his birth certificate if they give me the young one. I'll be like, fine, you're playing anyway. Elliot, what's your second pick?
Nick Nolte from Rookie of the Year.
Chet Sedman. Okay, right on.
Nuke Lelouch.
Oh, Gary Busey, sorry.
Wait, who?
Nuke Lelouch from Bull Durham.
Right on.
Ed the Monkey
Damn it! Literally the one I was going to go with.
Jonah Hill from Moneyball.
Damn it. No, he was a real person, actually. I'm going to go with...
he actually wasn't.
What, really?
He was... Yeah, it was from the book. He was like five different people made into one character.
I did not know that, so thank you, Jaycee, for making me right.
I'm going to go with Crash Davis from Bull Durham. So that's...
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
You went with some surprising,
you
actually.
You went a minor leaguer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
The 40-year-old one, too.
So, the Oscar nominations just came out today. Who would have thought 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, that we would be dealing with, and I'm not taking anything from him, two-time Oscar nominee, Jonah Hill.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, when I watched Superbad, I didn't think, this guy's going to be nominated for a couple of Oscars. I thought, this guy's fat. kind of funny, I guess.
All he had to do was pull his dick out at a pool party.
That's it.
That was apparently a prosthetic.
It's going to be that kind of party. I'm sure, pull my dick out at a pool party and win an Oscar. So.
You see, it was huge. I'm sure it was.
I was happy for him. I was like, "Oh, you're pecking that? Cool, good for you."
No, he's not. No, he's definitely not. Anyway, that was just fun for me.
We keeps it classy.
The big news in professional baseball actually is that an expanded replay proposal has been approved by the Owners Association. And let me break down a few of the things that this adds. Managers get one challenge per game, possibly two if their first challenge is upheld. Umpires can't initiate reviews unless that team's manager has used all of his or it's beyond the seventh inning. Calls at first base, at the plate, and on the bases will be reviewable. And another stipulation of the new replay rule, and I'm quoting directly from ESPN here, will allow clubs to show replays of controversial plays in the stadium for the first time. Teams will be able to air up to two replays at regular speed. Then, once the review is completed, fans in the park will be shown an additional replay that demonstrates why the call was overturned or upheld. I guess I didn't realize it was a rule in baseball. Like, in football, every play is replayed up on the big screen. Like
you can always hear the crowd reacting.
But apparently not so in baseball. I didn't realize this.
Yeah, apparently baseball is like, hey, we might have fucked up. Don't let the people know.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys this question. Do you think the new replay rules with all these new, basically giving managers the ability to replay things is going to help?
Help what?
let me
is there a bad umpire problem?
Well, yes, there is. Let me just say it this way. If I had one Planeteer ring for every call I saw blown by an ump even after a replay this year, I'd be able to summon Earth's greatest mulleted superhero. And that's right, Brian Bosworth, you're a distant second. So yes, there is, in my opinion, a huge problem with umpires completely blowing calls. And it's not so much the ones that they blow in the moment, but to see them go...
Sorry,
are you laughing every time I said blow?
Well, you phrasing. Said blow in the moment.
Yeah, phrasing.
Fair enough. But when you have replay and the umpires are still getting it wrong, I don't understand why now the manager can tell you to go get it wrong after you look at replay is any better.
Yeah, no, this won't help anything at all.
Well, I mean,
I think it'll turn out to prove worse because I think they'll make worse calls.
Potentially, sure.
I mean, it'll help some things. Like I can think of two instances in the last 5 years in which a player had a perfect game ruined on the last out because of a blown call and of a call that the umpire like minutes later realized was incorrect.
Yeah,
and.
Which sets them apart from the NFL, in which they will take to their graves that they were absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And then they will have Mike Pirretta, or whatever his name, get in the booth and be like, well, here's why that call was right, and have Gruden go, you're a fucking idiot! You know?
here's the thing. Instant replay, I think every sport should have instant replay.
True.
It's something that probably should be there. But it doesn't make good... it doesn't make bad umpires into good ones.
That's true. In fact, in the NFL, it seems like it made bad referees into
worse ones.
Petulant referees.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I wasn't wrong. I'll go check it out. Oh, yeah. Look, I'm still right.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Am I wrong?
You can't see Elliot rubbing his nipples, but that's
like on South Park.
Drawing on old experiences that I had with a former employer, and I think this is just it speaks a little bit to the psychology of what it is to be like when you've got a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you the place that I work that I used to work at. We had one person who would pull an order, one person checked the order, another person checked that person's check, and then another person actually boxed the order. So when you've got that many people involved, you've got one person who's one person responsible for grabbing all the items. The next person after that is going to check those and then, you know, so on down the line. if you know that you have a backup plan, you're less likely to pay attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, the place didn't actually improve in terms of getting customers what they wanted until they took away the two middlemen.
Right.
Like, it was the person who grabbed the order and the person who boxed the order. When you've got just two people responsible for something, that's the absolute most that you can give something for it to turn out the best possible outcome. Because the more safety net you give, the more likely it is for the person who's trying to make the calls not actually pay attention.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was more to the rule, something about adding in a new team of umpires, but it was a little unclear as to whether those people's sole job is replay or whether they're just adding more umpires in general, like to watch different aspects of the game. I'm not really sure.
I mean, so the only way that I could see this being actually an improvement is if the current crop of umpires that they have mm-hmm. are making one bad call per game, because that's one bad call that's going to get overturned probably. But mm-hmm. if it's more than that, then it makes no difference whatsoever, most likely. So, like, again, it's not going to make them better umpires. What you need is better umpires.
But I agree, but it could be like a catalyst if you have people in the stands, you know, being able to see those plays now.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, you know, we see a change down the line to make the replay better, to where it's more like football or basketball, where they will go over it.
See, but I feel like it may just work itself out. Like, we may think, oh, over the years, finally, things got better because we implemented these changes. And really what it is, well, over the years, the really terrible umpires died because they're all 78, and they brought in new. That's always been my problem with NFL officiating. I'm like, why is the guy who is in the end zone 40 yards away 90 years old and making a call? Are you fucking kidding
me? My big thing about NFL refs is they need to get the fucking way.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I get you.
Again, because they're old, they're slow, and they can't get out of the fucking way.
It's to the point where, like, running backs are starting to use them as blockers.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you get the hell out of the way. We got cameras now. We don't need you on the field too much.
To paraphrase both Adam and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, few people understand the psychology of dealing with an NFL referee. Anyway, that's pretty much all I had on the docket, unless there's anything you guys can think of that we need to talk about.
Please post as many LeBroning gifts as you can. I want to see at least 25.
And you know what? I think we should put up a prize for the best gif of you, LeBron.
Yes.
If you guys can make a gif or an Instagram video of yourself LeBroning, I would potentially. You know, I'm going to put up a prize for it. I'm going to give, like, if you post in the comment section,
you're all terrible people.
Either a gif of yourself LeBroning or an Instagram video. It has to be you LeBroning, I'm going to give out a prize. I'm going to do it.
Jordan Worth Cobb, KS Bulldog, we're looking at you.
If anybody lives in Miami, and you can
LeBron. Instant winner.
And when Brian's not looking, I'm going to shit in the box.
And by the way, I wanted to say congratulations to Punkin Drublick, who won our the contest we put up the last time we had a show, which was come up with a team name for our cast of characters on this particular podcast, and I believe the name he came up with was the Austin Chunky Drunkies.
Nice.
Which I was like, all right, even though I am trying to lose weight, I can't help the fact that that's a really great name. So,
do we do the truffle shuffle?
Yeah, well, except for Adam, of course.
Well, yeah, Adam's built. Yeah,
whatever. Fuck you, Adam. You're fired.
I can shuffle something in there.
He's married now. Isn't he going to get fat soon?
No.
I'm trying so hard.
That's the hope, obviously. Again, you can catch our stuff on iTunes along with all the other One of Us content. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also follow ITL Cast, or you can follow us individually. I am at Bryguy Salisbury.
At ITL Elliot. And if you're going to buy anything on Amazon, please click a link and get through. Oh.
That was going to be my next thing.
Oh, sorry.
Jumping the gun.
Sorry.
That should be
your Twitter handle? Name. Your Twitter handle.
At jumping the gun.
Ooh. At JCDillion1.
At the_beef.
No, I've always told you what your actual, like.
Little aside.
Absolutely. Aside. It's got to be your professional nickname. And of course, Amazon. If you're going to buy anything from Amazon, please come here first. Click on that pick of the week link right there on the sidebar. If you get to Amazon that way, no matter what you buy, we get a kickback. We get a cut of that particular purchase, and that really helps us keep the lights on. So please keep doing that. And also, again, if you're one of the four conference champions, JC has already reached out, but we will continue until we make sure we have everybody's availability. We can get with you and record your segment, and then we will crown a winner. And I'm so excited to get you guys the trophy that I've picked out for this particular fantasy football challenge. It's pretty awesome.
And I just want to say real quick, Brian and Chris, they are working extremely hard, and they're going to have a lot of good stuff for you on One of Us this year.
Yeah,
no. It's going to be they're going to go balls deep on this.
We're going to go balls deep this year. I like that. I like that mantra. And I also like the mantra of, like, sleep is for dead people.
Yeah, I don't know when you sleep, dude.
I don't sleep. It's kind of terrifying. I have, like, hallucinations, both auditory and visual.
Because, like, you're on multiple podcasts now. Yeah. Like, you were guessing on TV Dudes, and then you guessed it on Beerus a while back, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things it's funny, because as we're doing all this new stuff with the site, one of the things I would like to do more often is
work more.
Is work more. Is guest on other podcasts. So, yeah, I had the very good fortune of being on the TV Dudes and talking about Archer and Bob's Burgers and the new show Chosen with an Ozen. And that was a lot of fun. But yeah, so there's a lot of great stuff coming this year, and I could not be more excited.
Okay, so what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to start a podcast called Sleep. and you're going to join me, and we're just going to snore for
Are you saying you want him to sleep hours. With you?
And that's fine, because I've been
and
waiting.
And we're going to record it.
I've been waiting for that invitation from Adam for I can't even tell you how long. But
it's like what a neighbor.
There you go. But that's going to do it for us. I want to thanks again to my all-star team of Monstars. Of co-hosts, I couldn't do it without you guys, because I've tried and it's terrible. And yep, that's Inside the Locker, and we're gonna sign off for now. But I do want to remind you that sports are not just for jocks anymore.